Blog Talk Radio.
I went to the gypsies. Gypsy sitting all alone. I said, "Tell me, Gypsy, when will my gal be home?" Gypsy said, "Silver, put some silver in my hand, and I'll look into the future and tell you all I can." I crossed her palm with silver, then she started into lie. She said, "Now listen, mister, she'll be here by and by." Oh, what a lie. I've been waiting and a-waiting, and she ain't come home yet. Something must have happened to make my gal forget. I hates a lying gypsy. We'll take good money from you. Tell you pretty stories and take your money from you. But if I was a gypsy, I would take your money too.
Welcome to Care to Read. You've got your Omega 7 live coming to you straight from my studio. I am your advocate, the one you need, and the advisor, the one you want. And I am your emperor here to serve you. I'd like to welcome you to our another day segment in the Care to Read room. Ladies and gentlemen, we're starting a brand new segment for this month. And if you haven't read the episode, you ought to go out and read it. And it's entitled Helping Babies from the Bench, Best for Babies. And we're going to be discussing what is best for babies. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to also acquaint you to our billboard and to our itinerary. We are going to be speaking from the platform of the attorney at law, and periodically we will have attorneys to come in to talk about what is best for babies and to also do family law. We are going to also be covering on our itinerary family life education, talking about issues that pertain to the family. And today's segment, what are the goals of the courts, and what are their goals for the children and infant in their care? And we also are going to be talking about the court team for male practice or male treated infants and toddlers. And we're going to be talking about what do you do when you set up a team. And we will also do the family life education. And we'll be talking about some research-based international access and early intervention. And early intervention is working with birth to three. So we're focusing in on the infant and toddler and the family in the court system this month. And with our Always Sisters, Always Friends segment, we are going to bring up the rear. And we've invited Becky Ruffer as the executive director for preventative abuse. And we are waiting for Becky to get back to us. Becky is going to be on the show after this week, so we are going to bring her back on to talk about these issues, because Becky works with the whole staff in looking at male-treated infant and toddlers and abuse. Now, our health at awareness segment, we'll be talking about the mental health and looking at the services for children and parents in the mental health area. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like for you to join us on this venture and be a part of our Care to Read Room rituals, which we do in the Talking Care Room. So if you will stand by for station identification, we'll be right back at you, and we will be ready to go right into our meditation. And I'd like for you to take a station identification. Stay tuned.
I went to Columbia University in New York City for a year. I didn't like Columbia very well. A big university in the very heart of a big city, it didn't seem to me to have what I thought was a feeling of college life or campus life. And then, at that time, there was prejudice at Columbia. I had difficulty getting a room in the dormitory as a Negro student. And then, being interested in writing, I wanted to become a member of the staff of the Columbia College newspaper, The Spectator. And so I tried out for it. You had to go through sort of preliminary test and show some ability. And do you know what they assigned me to? Me, a Negro student, they assigned me to Society and Fraternity News. And they knew very well that I had no access to most of the fraternity houses or dances that the white students went to. And so I was unsuccessful in making the staff of the Spectator. My father had wanted me to become a mining engineer. By that time, I'd made up my mind that I'd like to be a writer. We didn't agree on objectives. So at the end of the year, I wrote my father in Mexico City and told him that I had decided to try to be a writer. And if he didn't approve of my plans, he needn't send me any more money. Well, he didn't send me any more money. I found myself in New York City with only $13 at the end of my college year. And that is what I started out in life on. Ever since that time, I've been making my own living. And with this $13, I went down to Harlem, got a room, and began to look for a job.
Ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to welcome you back, and we'd like to also ask you to prepare for the talking cure. As you get ready, we're going to go to station identification. Shoulders are for emergency only. Stay tuned with Nikki Giovanni.
Shoulders are for emergencies only. Talk to me, poem, I'm all alone. Nobody understands what I'm saying. Have you been in jail, poem? A lot of poems go to jail like a lot of women who get tired of no good men. Do no good poems beat up on people? Do no good poems say, I'm sorry, the next day? I know poems get lost because they're always being found. There are wanted posters, milk bottles, and lonesome guitars in the night looking for a poem to take home. I know poems get neglected, just like doo-wop singing on the back porch and the deacons opening church with leaning on the everlasting arms. People forget what got them over, what saved them. What are your plans, poem? Give it up. I hear you're a rap star now, going for the Grammy and the gold. Everybody's singing your praises. Do you ever miss your home? The sign on I-81 says, shoulders are for emergencies only. Ride me, poem. I think I've got the blues.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. If you will stand to your feet, please, and try to recollect our family reunion. In remembering our family reunion, we called all of our ancestors together, and we reconnected them back to their loved ones. I don't want you to forget that moment. That aura is still permeating the room, remembering that we could do nothing of ourselves except for asking the Creator to allow our ancestors to let us stand on their shoulders. In this monumental day, on the 4th of July, when our brothers and sisters and our ancestors completed the Jim Crow process, when they were free, when they learned how to build the first 100 institutes up from slavery, let's remember our ancestors during this day and remember them in a way that we'll always remember. It is their backs that we stand on, though they be crooked and bent. We want to call our ancestors forth because we give them all the credit for the work that has been laid. We know that as we go into a new dispensation with our new President Obama, I want you to keep heart and remember that Obama represents what we can be as African American people. Do not become disenfranchised by what you hear, what you say, or what is said about him. Always remember that God sent him to us. And in order to do something to us, we must embrace our president-elect. And we must remember that this day on the 4th of July, as the ramparts roar, and as the rockets were bursting through, we must remember that this day we got our freedom. And we want to use our freedom to help all men and women. We want to be free, that we can be free in our spirit if we have rejected our great majesty of presence. Yes, there's people are not free now. Yes, it's appearing to be slowful. But we must remember it took a long time for this day to come for us to have a black president of the United States. Let us be mindful that things are about to change and that they will change. As long as you believe that this is only a mirage and that what you see before you is an illusion, but we can make those things real by believing in ourselves and believing that Barack Obama can get the job and will get the job done with our help. alive, soldier. Barack Obama needs all of us to place ourselves in the right position to assist and aid him, and to be out in the front line of every one of your cities to market the possibility for Obama to be elected again to be president. Am I putting out accolades? Yes, I am. Because this is not a time to turn your back on Barack Obama, but this is a time to embrace the agenda, to assist him with the Social Security Act and also with the health care plan. He has made some great efforts to make a difference in this world. Now we have to get behind him. On this 4th of July day, I want to see as many of you make commitments to supporting him as possible. Election again for next year, 2012. You can prepare yourselves now, youngsters. Go and talk to your parents about registering, because you want to be in that number when we get ready to vote for our elect on 2012. I want you to understand, if you're not registered to vote, you need to get registered to vote. If you're a high school student and you're 18 years old or will be 18 years, make sure you take that opportunity to register to vote. Now, Barack Obama needs your help. He needs your help around the diaspora. He needs your help in organizing. He needs your help in assisting. And I want to make sure you understand that it is our inalienable right to assist and aid him. Ladies and gentlemen, stand with me for the national anthem, and I will be singing "Oh Beautiful." Oh, beautiful, for spacious skies, for amber waves of grain, for purple mountains' majesty above the future place. Like to thank you so much for going on that patriotic walk with us as we remember when Barack Obama was brought into office, and the day that we celebrated and we rejoiced over an African American being voted into the White House. We still remember that moment, and we haven't forgot Barack, and we want you to know that we are behind you on this radio station, and we support you. As today, when we gathered up the strength to bring all of the support and the volunteers together on the 4th of July, our Emancipation Proclamation Day. I want you to know the time was spent well, Barack, as we gathered up momentum for you and we registered young men and women to vote to make sure that they remembered on this day is the day that we were freed. And we know only freedom can come to those who believe in a process and a purpose. We believe in a process, and the process is yes, we can. Can we do it again? Yes, we can. We can bring that momentum to pass. Barack Obama, we want to let you know that we are behind you, and the supporters here in Northern Indiana will always support you, and you will have our commitment on that. Ladies and gentlemen, I did that special segment for the benefit of the 4th of July to let you know that we have to acknowledge the fact that never in history have we ever had an African-American president voted in, and we made history then, and we'll make history again, but we cannot do it without the support of those young ones who will get out and register to vote. So on this moment in airtime, I am putting the plugger in to suggest that if you're not registered, and get out and vote come the election of 2012. Thank you so much. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to thank you. Because this is a holiday, we are not going to bore you, but we're going to make sure you understand that those rockets that were lighting up in the air and the ramparts that were so beautiful, and as they saw the fireworks go in the air, it meant something to African Americans. It meant a closer walk towards their freedom. I don't want you to ever forget that fight in the war, in the air, was fought not only so that we can see freedom days, but also so that we could be counted as men and women and have our right to vote and use the power of the pen and the power to vote. I don't want you to take it lightly, ladies and gentlemen. African American, we have fallen almost lower than a refugee. We've gone complete course to get the right to vote, and most of us do not know the value of it. Please do not ever forget the value of our freedom, and don't take it lightly lest we be placed back into servitude once more. It's very important that you should understand that some of our relatives died in the lagoons trying to get home. Some of them died in the Pacifics and over in the Erie and in the Red Sea, trying to make it home, and none of them ever got the chance to vote or to have their freedom. And now that we have gotten our freedom and the right to vote, let's exercise and use it. Now, I'd like to say a prayer on behalf of the families here today. Father God, we thank you for every family that is present here today, that is representing you, that lives on account of you. And the breath and the air that they breathe is not in their own strength, Father, but in the strength that you have lent your eyeshade to. And we thank you, Father, that you have reminded us that on this day, the fight that was in the air was a fight that was done through principalities and tearing down strongholds and high places. I want every African American to stand erect now. And remember that we have a job to do, and that job is to be patriotic to ourselves and our country, and to understand that now they are connecting Africa, little Africa, to our country, the United States of Africa. Now is the time, Africans, that you should aspire to really be Africans. There is a stake in it for you. You must remember that God has stored these things up for us. The foolish things of the wicked has been stored up for the wise. And as we begin to look at what is happening in the atmosphere, we can allow the Spirit to minister to our soul and tell us that the last shall be first and the first shall be last. We will rule again. And as we look towards ruling in Mother Africa, there's a preparation, family, and I pray that each and every one of you understand that there is a preparation. We won't be able to go skipping in the glory into Eli Ife without having our irons sharpened. Let us sharpen our irons today. Let us be mindful if we are to be a steward over a few things, that God would make us stewards over great and many things. As we begin the process here in the United States of America on this ground. Help us to come together on whatever account to begin the process to make a transition to go abroad to Africa, to be able to head up officials and to set the record straight that our country has not been abandoned, that every African that is living and have their being should have a desire to go abroad and to assist and to aid in whatever process to get that country back on its feet again. I will decree that everyone here in the room today, every family, will be committed to the process of getting Africa back on the continent map again, and that every one of us will open up our skills and offer assistance to the United States and Africa in building once more. Now, every one of you patriotic men and women who have served abroad as military, as Navy, as Air Force, as Marine, as school teachers, I say that Barack Obama has been under attack for a while, and there is a lot going on. Your prayers should be towards him this day. And we pray that God and the ancestors will put a hedge around Barack Obama and give him strength in this day and time, and that will lead him to do the right thing with the soldiers, and that God will direct their path, and God will direct those soldiers' path. We pray that Barack Obama's family and their household are safe and protected. We pray that this mission that he started, that he will complete, he will be faithful to complete this mission that was started. And with your help, God, you will direct him, and he will lean not on his own understanding. African Americans and other family members represented here today, know that Africa is the center and the focal point. Keep your eyes on the prize. Keep your eyes on the prize. Africa is the focal point. There is no two ways about it. It is the designated place for Ile Ife, for the new Jerusalem, for the new heaven that will come down from the heavens. Here on this earth, we will see heaven rise up. There is a multiplicity of natural herbs and minerals and all sorts of devices right there in a land that we call waste, Africa. Let us be mindful that we can quickly clear up the situation by defining the fact that Africa has always been richly and endowed with resources. Father God, give us a mindset to align ourselves with the effort to raise Mother Africa back up again. Give us a mindset, Father, to raise up Mother Africa again. And let us have houses that we didn't build with our own hand. Let us have royalty and riches, and let us take our proper places again, Father. We thank you that you call certain men and women to this task, and we know who we are. Let us get ready for this journey. As we prepare ourselves to get ready for the journey and the mission, Father, make the way plain and clear. As I call on the ancestors today, I call on the ancestors to assist us today. Ladies and gentlemen, I like to pour a glass of water for my father's spirit, and I say Ashe. I like to pour a glass of water for my mother's spirit, and I say Ashe. Mother, I light this candle that it might guide you all the way back home so that you might be able to assist us in our journey. Father, I light a candle for you, and may it guide you through the tunnels and guide you through the lakes and streams and to the highways and byways and make your way home. I pour libations to the north and I say Ashe. I pour libation to the South, and I say Ashe. I pour libations to the East, and I say Ashe. I pour libations to the West, and I say Ashe. Ladies and gentlemen, do as I do likewise, as you ignite the flame and the candle for your mother and your father, if they are deceased, or your deceased loved ones. And light the way for them to come home. Call their names as you pour the libation, and acknowledging a glass of water to quench their thirst. May they forevermore be vitally endowed with the water that you have poured. And ladies and gentlemen, periodically pour out 7 to 9 glasses of water on your altar, keeping the flow of water moving in your life. As you do these things, you will be mindful of reconnecting with your ancestors. Gentlemen, synchronize your vital signs with me as I synchronize my vital signs with you, taking deep breaths in and out, inhaling the oxygen of God and exhaling the depletion of exhaustion. As we breathe in and out, ladies and gentlemen, remember we are taking the breath of God, the life of God, and the life of the flesh. Ladies and gentlemen, breathe in deeply with me. Taking deep breaths, meditating on nothing but the spoken word. As you call your ancestors forward, synchronize your vital signs with them, and may you begin to become on one accord. I'd like to thank each and every one of you for going on the journey with me and the talking cure. If there is anyone that has palsy or a stick in their mind or in their health, now that the frequencies are here, you can tap into the frequencies. Reach out. The frequencies are inviting you in. The Spirit is here, ladies and gentlemen. You can receive your healing. I sense that there's someone that needs encouragement, that someone that needs to be put on the right path. I sense that there's a child that wants to come home and a father that doesn't want to stay in the streets anymore. I sense that mothers are wanting to be the wife that their husband has asked them to be. I sense that those grandparents don't want to keep the children anymore. They want their mothers to come and take them. Now let me in this situation be made whole, Father, and may you map out each and every one of the family a direction in their life. In New York City, there stands a lady proud and tall above all else, and all who sees her knows just what she stands for. She stands for liberty for you and me. And I am proud to be called an American, to be named by the home and the free. I'm going to honor my flag, but I'm going to trust in God. Oh, with my statue of liberty, I will honor my flag, but I'm going to trust in God and my statue. thank you, ladies and gentlemen. As a patriotic person, an acknowledgement to our patriotic sons, I hope you are singing your patriotic song as the stars go throughout the universe that burst and gleam today on this 4th of July day. We honor this day and we set it holy. And we hallow this day and set it aside for all African Americans to remember that on this day, the Emancipation Proclamation was fought, even though we didn't get the news until June 15 under Juneteenth Day. We acknowledge this because we all as African Americans know that those stars that were bursting in the sky and atmosphere represented our freedom. And ladies and gentlemen, as we went on that little journey, I hope you were able to go with me. Thank you so very much for joining us. And we'd like to take a station identification, and we will be back at you in the atmosphere. We know it's the power of faith that gives us the ability to come on here and do all these fantastic things for you. So go with us on the power of faith. Yes, yes, ladies and gentlemen, it is our ancestral song that makes us strong. I want you to know that without the inspiration and perspiration that we get from our ancestors, we couldn't go on. That is why we acknowledge them so frequently here in this room. You ought to do the same thing. Teach your children about ancestralship and teach them to commune with God every day. Ladies and gentlemen, let's get ready for our attorney at law. Our attorney at law gives us information. That segment of the show, we're going to feature courting for maltreated infants and toddlers. That's right. We are going to try to work on every state having their own official court team. I'm working with two young ladies out of New York, and one is out of Pittsburgh, that has been working with maltreated infants and toddlers. They formalize court teams to work directly with the courts to help the babies from the bench. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen, as we get our featured song before we start, Ujamaa.
Oh,
Welcome back, family. And you've got your Omi Inca live here coming to you from the segment of Attorneys at Law. We'd like to welcome all of you attorneys in the room. And we'd like to also say that this segment is being featured and sponsored by a paralegal. And if you are a paralegal out there and you would like to join us, we ask you to do so. You can call those digits at 646-478-0270. This segment can be featured by a paralegal or by the attorneys. However, in the courtroom, facilitators, co-parenting facilitators, as well as paralegals, can work directly with the courts in helping babies from the bench. And our topic today is best for babies. And first of all, I'm going to give you a little background information, a little foundation, so that you'll know exactly what these mission is all about. Now, the core team for male treatment infants and toddlers was formulated by a few great counties, and I'd like to give you their names: Fort Bend County, Texas; Des Moines, Iowa; Hattiesburg, Mississippi; Orleans Parish, Louisiana; Allegheny County, and Pennsylvania. These counties all have something in common. They formalized the core team for the male-treated infants and toddlers. And here recently, Indiana. I head up the chapter here in northern Indiana. Now, I came aboard with this organization because of my background in family life education and my experience in working with neonatals. And I wanted to be a part of something that would help infants who couldn't speak for themselves. We work with formalizing programs, and one of the programs that I'm formalizing here is to look at low birth rate infants who are being developed with a less weight than normal children, and that is our focus here. Now, why did the team formalize, and what is the purpose and the goal? The goal of the core team for male practice infants and toddlers are, number one, to improve outcome for male-treated infants and toddlers. That's to make sure that somebody's speaking on their behalf, because you know these children can't speak for themselves. Number two, to reduce the reoccurrence of abuse and neglect, because it does occur frequently, ladies and gentlemen. And in my recent and prior job, I was required to report all abuse in male treatment in infants and toddlers by law. Number three, change the court's culture to focus on the needs of the infant and toddler. Now, why do I say that? If the court system is treating all clients like a generic commodity, we have to inform the courts and the judge that infants require certain type of sensitivity treatment. Certain situations where infants need emotional attachment, they need nutritional attachment, and they need someone to speak on their behalf to indicate this in court so we don't treat the child like a commodity and they don't go through the system like a warehouse number. So with experts like myself and others in child development, we can better acquaint the courts with what is needed by that infant. Now, we are partnering with an attorney that works in the area of family law. His name is Attorney Braden, and we spoke before, and he's also spoke in our room as well. Now, this topic is going to be a topic that you're going to see continually, looking at the court team. Who makes up the court team? The court team is made up by social workers, made up by special needs teachers. It's also made up by early intervention behavior therapists. It's made up by occupational therapists, physical therapists, social service, and clergy as well, and paralegals. And these people on the committee help to give input to the courts as to what little infant and little toddler needs, so that the courts will become more sensitive to the biological stages and ages of the infants and toddlers. Now, I read you the main three reasons why. Now, the court team project has its roots in Miami. That's where it originally started, Miami, Florida, in the courtroom of the judge Cindy Linderman. That's where it originally originated at, okay? And her mission at that time was to break the cycle of intergenerational violence and the healing of the children and the family. She wanted to break that cycle and to start a new process for the families. And recognizing her effort to do this, there were a number of specialists that wanted to help her. Now, these specialists had to take time out of their schedule to be a part of this male practice court team. They were the ones that were called in any case of abuse, and they assessed the case to make sure it was properly administered and that the child receives the necessary services that they need to have. So in other words, we become an overseer of the courts, and we make recommendations to the judges, and the judges should rely heavily on us for our input in talking about what infants need. Now, we also would like to rely on our attorney because he is the one that tried various different cases, and he should also be up on the sensitivity mode for emotional needs of infants and toddlers, as well as the nutritional and as well as the educational. Now, I like to say that what has happened in the past is that these children have not received their services, and they've gone through the system, and they have been found wanting. They have been found going through the system without adequate, proper procedures in acknowledging their birth rate and acknowledging their needs as an infant and toddler. Infant and toddlers require something very different and special than the average elementary student. There is more emotional attachment. Infants can become attached to human beings. And just like mammals all are attached to their children for a longer period of time, and they transfer that attachment over to their friends and loved ones. So it is only natural that these mammal babies would be attached emotionally and physically. The real trick is that we must be in these courtrooms to talk to the judges so they make sure that they implement in their plan and in the records that they are to receive specific services, and they have to correlate with other outside agencies to immediately administer those services. And some of them can be rendered through child care centers as well as through the home and in the foster home. But it's our job to make an assessment of what goes on in the courtroom and to also be there to make recommendation and to oversee the outcome and to be a voice for that infant or toddler. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to invite you to the phone line. We're going to open up our phone lines for parents out there who might have children in foster care, for parents who may have lost their parental rights, and you are looking for some insight as to what you can do as a gesture to win your children back. I will say this much, that in most of the 44 states, there has been a law passed for parents who are looking for visitation rights and who have gone through divorce. They must go through the 6 credit hours to receive the right to be able to have visitation rights with their child, because these classes are telling them how to live separately from their spouse, and they must go through these 6 credit hours, and the courses are usually taught online, and they're self-course or self-paced courses. And the judge needs to have a plan of visitation rights for you. When you're done with the course, you must present the court with a plan of how you intend to share the visitation rights with your significant other or your ex-significant other. And if the judge is not satisfied with this plan, he can send you back to work with a mediator or a co-parenting facilitator to help you draw up a plan correctly. Now, some of you parents may be out there and you've lost parental rights, and you may have had a problem with the system because your child may have appeared to be neglected or was neglected or whichever have you were accused of neglect. You can lose your parental rights, and that means you have no more authority over that child, and now that child is a ward of the state and is waiting to be placed in foster care. parents, I know you may be pulling your hair out and you may be really weary about the whole thing, and you may say it wasn't fair, and you may say that my child belongs with me, but there is a process, and I urge you to go through the process so that you can properly present to the courts that you're doing everything that they asked you to do in order to get your child back and to gain your parental rights back. It's very important that we correct the problem of the family courts, because we're getting a heavy load of children coming into the system who have been taken from their parents because of male treatment. And there's a large, large population of children that are being abused in the home by the parents, unfortunately. And when this happens, the mother needs to be taken out of the scenario, and she must be given some relief. And she must also be given hope and training. Because there is a chance for you mothers if you understand that you must be trained properly and you must have some way of escape. You must have some alternative to relieve you of the stress that you're feeling when you are anguished and when you lash out at an infant. An infant cannot speak for themselves. An infant cannot even advocate for himself or herself. So therefore, people like myself and others are brought in to advocate on behalf of that infant. Now, I've been doing advocacy work for almost 25 years, and one of the areas of working with special needs children that I specialize in is early intervention, and that is from birth to three. Even though I'm credentialed to work in a classroom with elementary school children, my preference is working with the family from birth to three, because we can work in those hospitals and work directly with the families as well as in the schoolhouses. Now, I'm saying to parents who are out there right now, and you know things are not right with you, and you haven't seen your child in months or even years, and you don't have parental rights, and you are upset, you might even be facing a charge. You need to seek out an attorney and you need to get help immediately. Do not spend another day wondering where your child is and whether or not your child has been placed. Make sure you get enough unction to get up and go out and seek legal assistance in your situation. I am not an attorney, and I'm not a member of the bar. I cannot help you in the courtroom as representation. There are plenty of lawyers that can. It's very important that we understand that family law is where most focus should be given for volunteer work, because there's a breakdown in the family, and it's affecting all middle-class families as well as lower socioeconomic families. As a matter of fact, more lower socioeconomic people are not even going to the Justice of the Peace to obtain a license. They're just shacking, and the children are just there. No paperwork has been done on making sure that the father adopts these children, and no paperwork has been done on parental right of the significant other's boyfriend who wants rights to this child. So it's very difficult for the courts to work with someone who is not in an institution of marriage to give them a plan for their co-parenting. It's very difficult. And a lot of those people don't show up because they figure they don't have to because they're not married. I'd like to urge you people who are living in cohesive situations where you are not married, I'd like to urge you to make sure you do the right thing that is going to legally give you the most rights in a situation. You don't want to lose rights, but you want to gain them. Okay, and it's very important to understand the benefit of having things done appropriately so that when you do go and get custody of your child or want visitation rights, it will be easy for you to obtain those. Now, fathers, there's a special set of laws out there for fathers who are looking for visitation rights, and you must understand that there are all kind of research right now as we speak that are working with incarcerated fathers so that they can have more access to visit their infant and be in a vicinity so they can be able to better travel to go visit their infants and have more frequent time with them. And you do have a right to visit those children if you are set up with the courts and the courts have given you that right. You must tell your significant other that you want the right to see those children, and there is a process you can go through. It's very important that we understand that working with babies from the bench and helping the judge to decide the services that they need and giving input in our special backgrounds as behavior therapists. As a behavior therapist in the area of child development, we can give sensitivity instructions to the judge about the infants and what the judge needs to consider when placing a child in certain homes, especially when they're placing a special needs child into a home that has a deficit that needs to be administered and worked with around the clock. Situations where a judge is placing a mother, he has to know that she's capable of working with a child mentally around the clock, because it's very stressful when you work with children that have a disability. And if you're not informed, it can be overtaxing. And this is why you see the abuse so often with the mothers, because of frustration and not having a way to alleviate the stress, to get some stress time where they can bring someone else in to supplement this child's care. Now, as a behavior therapist, our job was to go into the home to work directly with the mother, to show the mother how to interact with the child so that it's healthy interaction, and to show the mother how to deal with the child's disability. Now, that child can also receive services right there in the child care center, the daycare, or family home setting. But we preferably like to teach the parent in the home so that the parent has a better way of incorporating these skills immediately with that child. And that mother then begins to go to class herself, and she takes classes through us to learn how to interact with a spina bifida, or learn how to react to the symptoms of a child that is having seizures, and giving them input as to what they need to do for their academics as well, and how to dress and feed and bathe the child. All these things have to go into place. So if the mother is having to be trained and given this insight specifically how to handle their own child, just think how much more work it is for a mother that is not the natural biological mother, who may have not even ever had any children in her whole life. So now she has got to acquaint herself with all of these necessary details about how to care for a special needs child. Now, I'm saying all that to say to you that the courts does need people like myself. They really do. And they need advocates who have a legal background and a child development background to make recommendation to the judge as to the special needs that these children need that are infant and toddlers who might have already been going through a male-treated adjustment and who've already gone through a system of being abused. Now, we don't want to further abuse that child by not properly servicing them. That is why it's so necessary for a team like myself and these other women to be available to all the court systems in every state. Now, there is a blocking, I want to tell you that, of a lot of court systems not wanting you to come in because you're abrasive and you might come in and alter what they're doing. But the state has put aside mandates in certain states where they want these male adjustment court teams to go in and to make themselves visible to the judge so the judge will know that he has some assistance and some help. Because the more help you give the judge in assisting in placing these children, the better he can or she can do their job in placing these children. Now, if there are any questions, if you'd like to call in, please do so at 646-478-0270. Now, when we talked about family law, Attorney Braden is going to be breaking down more information, more in detail as to what he does as a lawyer, okay? Now, the attorney who knows about the needs of very young children, he has to take additional classes. And I'm just going to be quite frank with you. His training does not lend itself to working with a very small child. He probably has to take additional classes in the area of early intervention, special needs prevention, and at-risk children. So that means he's in a classroom with people like myself taking these graduate courses in early intervention and special needs, and he's learning how to interact with the basic needs, best practices for the infant and toddler. You'll hear terms like the least restrictive environment. How can I place this child in a classroom and give him the least amount of restrictions in this class or in the home? And you may hear him talk about IEPs, individual plans that individual evaluation plans, that the parent and her advocate sits down and write up a plan, or her guardian ad litem or her co-parenting facilitator, they sit down, they write up a plan of what the structure will be for the family activities that this child will engage in, the times and the dates, and how it will incorporate in their life, and how it can offset the other parent's life so that it doesn't impede upon the programs or the outings that they're going to have. So all of this must be done in decent order. And it's very, very important that we understand special needs children have additional hidden problems that we have to anticipate for. If you're dealing with a child that is in a wheelchair, there's limitation, and you have to understand that wheelchair has to be accounted for, or if they're walking on crutches, all these things have to be anticipated. So then you get these teams of people in the co-facilitating or working directly with the mediator. Now, if you cannot come up with any kind of decision on working out a plan for what's best for you and that spouse, then at that point the court can and oftentimes will direct you to an arbitrator. This arbitrator has the ability to make the decision and make sanctions upon you, because at that point there's no more arguing back and forth. He will then assess the whole situation or her and make the decision on what they will render to the courts that will be a court order. Now, in the mediation team, the mediator is neutral. He cannot make or impede upon you any particular sanctions. He can only take down information and notes and make recommendation to the courts as to what his findings were, but he does not have the ability to sanction anything, or she doesn't. So if the judge is already giving you time with the mediator and you can't come up with anything, then he then might instruct you to go to arbitration. Each time you go to another level that is higher, you are paying for these fees out of your pocket. They're not all fees that come from the court. Now, you say that you may be lower socioeconomic and you have limited money. Now, you then have to realize then at that particular point that the judge is not going to put up with you not being able to come to a conclusion. He will render a decision for you. And family court sometimes can be very messy, very messy. And then juvenile goes right along with that. As a paralegal, that is one of the areas that I like to say is a specialty for me, because of the many years I've worked in educational law, it allowed me to work with family law in addition, because once you work with education, you're working with the family, and some of these things are indicative to what goes on in educational law. Now, one thing I will say is that you never stop working in this field. You become a consultant, and so afterwards you're still called upon to do certain counseling with the family. But I want those families to know out there that there is hope. There is hope. Your children sometimes can get caught up in the system and never get out. And I will also say that I like to share my story with some people and let them know that I was one who avoided the court system as a young child. It was like I almost could have been caught up in the system that was laid up for a person who lost their mother and their father. But fortunately, I was blessed that I had family members that did not want me to go through that route because of losing my family. At the same time, I can foresee what some of those other children are going through, and I have empathy for them because I can truly say, by the grace of God, there goes me. So I was a but-by. And being a but-by gave me all the more incentive to want to focus my life on working with family law and family education, because there's so much that can happen in our lives as we grow up that we're not responsible for, and that we find ourselves caught up in the glitches. And if your parents should die, both of them, you become a ward of the state. And at that point, the court has to make a decision as to who to sanction or who to give custody of the child to. And those things happen in African-American families so frequently that we oftentimes forget what we need to do to prepare to prevent this from happening. It can happen so fast that if you don't prepare for it, you can end up losing your loved ones to other outside people who are not in their lives. And that can happen. I know it. It can happen. But if you are up on things and you are there in the courtroom and you ask the judge to allow you to have parental rights over that child and to give you the ability to raise that child, then if you present all the necessary criteria, the judge will consider you. And the reason why I say that is that I look at these young people that become orphans and they become disconnected with their families. I know how it can happen, and I know that it happens every day. So African Americans, if you have younger brothers and sisters and your mother and father are deceased, you have to be extra careful to be careful to adopt your brothers and sisters and to bring them into your home and to work with the courts, because you can lose custody of your brothers and sisters to the court system as well. But fortunately enough, my family was able to intervene on my brother and I's behalf, so we never had to go that route, but we saw what it could have done to our family as a whole. That is why I'm more sensitive than anything to that orphan child and to the potential of those parents to lose parental rights, because you have family members who want to take the child, but if the proper procedures are not done, they can lose the custody of the brother or sister to that state system. And it could be an awful system to be locked into because it's so hard to get to that child, and that child could be transferred and moved several times before you even get a chance to say, I want to adopt my brother or sister. Now, I want you to keep that in mind, ladies and gentlemen, because we all are attached to something, and we all have, there are many, many men and women I work with that are foster children who are now grown, and they have a sensitivity, and who are also children who have been adopted. So it's nothing wrong with that if you've been adopted by your brother or sister or been adopted by outside people, as long as you grow up to be legitimate people and have a commitment to go back and give something back. You have to be willing to put something back in the system and give something back. And the best thing you can do is share your stories with the outside world to make it more credible. And as you share those stories, you have nothing to feel guilty about or feel a low status about, because people can touch you. You're approachable. You're reachable. And it's very important to understand that. And we'd like to thank you on that note. We're talking about court teams for maltreated infants and toddlers and the attorneys who know about the needs of the very young children. I hope you're out there, attorneys, and if you are, please call in. If you are a family law attorney, please do call in and share with us your insight. We'd like to hear from you. Now, we'd like to talk to you about we gave you the goals of the team and why it was so important for every state to formalize their team. And as I told you, my main focus is looking at low birth rate and what we can do about low birth rate here in northern Indiana and how we can help those family members who are experiencing this. So that is our goal here in this area. Now, I'd like to say I thank you so very much for going with me on this journey, and get ready for family life education as we go on. And we want to play Umoja for Unity.
Umoja is the message. Got to get the message to our brothers and sisters.
Surely we had tried, but we all live right there in Africa. never stand alone, 'cause unity's our resolution.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have to get the message to our brothers and sisters. We want you to be aware of family life education. And on during this spotlight, we want to get the message to our brothers and sisters. We're talking about research-based intervention and access to early intervention services. During this segment, we are continuing with what's best for babies. And as you know, that we have to make sure that we are knowledgeable about the best practices and the needs of an infant so that we can service them and give them their emotional stages and ages of services. So we want to make sure we're giving age-appropriate service. So the research has been done out there for us, and there's plenty of it, and I like to share that with you. And this information is coming from an organization that comes out of Practical Policies, and that's Healing the Youngest Child. And this is with the ABA Center and Children and the Law. So this is coming directly from the Law, from 0 to 3, Policy Center, I might add. Now, And looking at the research, they give some practical tips, and I like to read from that, and I quote, developmental tools to allow the courts and the child welfare staff to respond in a knowledgeable way. That's what they're offering this research for, so you can respond in a knowledgeable way, in a medical and developmentally needs of the baby and promote permanency. And that's one of the things that the courts want to do, promote permanency. So we need accurate research that will substantiate why the courts are doing specific things. So we have to have this documentation. And it says, and I quote, the National Research Council and the Institute of Medicine from NESIA, they are synthesizing this current scientific knowledge of child development from birth to age 5. And it's called on the nation thoroughly to reassess the policies that after, you know, that are after the session for the young children and increase the intervention. Now, intervention is something that you do to ward off a cause or a problem. Increase intervention and investment in the well-being of the child. And it says that the national data is unequivocally shown that the needs of the young children in the child welfare system are not being met, and that is why this is happening and provided for. And there is a need for someone to have a backup plan. And that's why they're encouraging the research to be there so that they can have some substantial information. So the project was created, the team, the members, the court team was created as a must team so that they could create all of these best practices for the infant all the way to age 5 years old to prove to the courts that these things are necessary. The project means the project team members must recognize the needs in changing in the ways that the cases involve male treatment. They want us to look at male treatment differently, and in the infants and the toddlers, and in handling the child and how the child is looked at. So everything they want you to do collectively based on the best practice of the infant and toddler. Now, these research teams are doing a very good job in trying to get information in. For example, it says each New York court implement the BCW, and this is the first major activity in reviewing court petitions filed on behalf of babies. In the Brown fever, okay, they talked about 20% of the court's files document are ordered. The health services are ordered for this, and they're requiring these files to be ordered. Now, what they're telling you exactly, they're going to be looking closely at how things are done in the courtroom and how they're handled based on what the needs are for that infant based on the best practices. So everyone must make themselves accustomed and acquainted to the best practices and the sensitivity of that child from birth up to age 5 years old. So statistics have to be proven and shown to show that over the past years, when procedures are followed based on the needs of that child, then they can be assured that things will work in a consistent manner. So they are monitoring what goes on with these issues of the cases for babies. Now, I want to also say that sometimes teachers can create research in the classroom as well as we write down our anecdotal notes and document information that must be passed on for permanent records. And most of the time, the special education, they look at these IEPs and they look at what is written by the teacher to make an assessment as to what they must give this child in the way of services. Okay? So it's very important that teachers be knowledgeable enough to know what are the diagnoses and what are the primary and secondary diagnosis of the child and making a good assessment of what the child can actually do, so that we are not redundantly repeating IEPs and giving the child goals that he's already met. They must give them goals that they have to meet or still in the process of meeting. You can't repetitiously give the child such insignificant goals that he's already met them within a week. So the IEP is very important for the parent not to take boilerplate IEPs from the teacher or from the administrator, but to write up her own goals that will be more indicative of what that child can do, and not oversighting what the child can do, and also making the goals reachable so that there are some obtainable goals. All these things go into place with this document called the IEP. It becomes an actual document. It is a contract that is written. It can be revisited, and addendums can be made to this particular document and updates, so that the parent is giving input and she's not allowing outsiders to make decisions for her. Now, I would like to also say, if the child is old enough to be in those meetings, he too can give input as to the things that he wants to do and that are feasible that he'd like to do. Now, these are documents that you hear quite a bit about. When dealing with the 457, which is a Section H of the law, it's a little different than when dealing with the elementary from elementary school. That is the IDEA, the 94-142 IDEA law. Now, all these laws are going over with the parent. The parent is very acquainted with these laws, and oftentimes they're given an actual copy of the laws to read for themselves. So, we're talking about research. There's been much research done, and there was currently research being done before I left the profession. And back in Minnesota, they found that it was so necessary for parents who had children in special education to bring their own cases and to seek assistance from the state in paying for their representatives, their advocates, or their attorneys, or their paralegals. And if these parents were successful and having an overturned verdict, they could, in the state of Minnesota, have their cases reimbursable and paid for. And that was some new legislature, which means that these advocates could advocate for these parents, and they didn't have to be an attorney. Because advocacy says a different thing than what somebody says when they're a member of the bar. Now, I'm not going to go into all those things, but let's get back on research. There's a lot of research being done right now, and it has to be research that is it's research-based. You just can't go giving a procedure to a district or to a school and it hasn't been tested out and researched. Now, there is a number of things going on right now under research. The mandate where special needs children, parents can't apply for government jobs in the government system working with special needs children. Now, they've done a number of IE research to find out how beneficial is this and what is the outcome. And that kind of research is so valuable because all of these mothers who have all of this experience from working as a self-advocate, they now can put their skills to work in a place where they can be paid for it. Now, they're testing to see how beneficial it would be to have these advocates who are so knowledgeable go to work for the government and assist other family members who have disabilities and aid them as a professional. So, in my last research, when I read the documents, it was found that it's so beneficial to have these mothers who have had a lifetime of work experience in working with their own child now put all this to work for them and be paid for them. It was discovered that the majority of the institutes and locations that were given the opportunity to have parents work there, they found that they were so beneficial that they gained so much knowledge from having these well-prepared mothers working there who had hands-on experience that it could never pay for the weight and goal of getting someone that they have to train, because there's so much more of a foundation that they already have for the subject matter because they've lived working with special needs children such as spina bifida, children that have that have seizures, epilepsy seizures. All of these things are so beneficial when they go into these institutions and lend their services. So the research is being done is that it's very necessary, it has been successful, and that these parents can come in ready to work and they can become effectively immediately and not have to wait 6 months after they get their training. So that's just one aspect of research that is being done out there. And there's a number of things going on with high technology in research for special needs children. They're looking at the handheld palm pilots, how beneficial they are for special needs children, and they have created all kind of technical assistant material for those children with special needs and found that these are ways to alleviate the stress of them not being able to maneuver with their hands. So there's a lot of technology being done for special needs children as we sit here and talk. And I'd like to let you know that special education is a broad, broad field. For those mothers who are having to contend with work with infants and toddlers who are disabled, don't forget that you can advance your skills by working in somebody's corporation or organization who works with special needs children. You know the lingo, you know the procedure, you know the buzzwords. There are plenty of high-frequency words and buzzwords in this organization. Just learning the agencies and the services that are available that will make you so beneficial to an organization with your background. So mothers, if you're sitting at home and you have nowhere to work and you have a special needs child and you would like to work a part-time job, the government in some states is making this available to you to go back to work and work in a capacity. If your child is grown now and on their own and living in some type of resident house and you're freed up to work, you ought to go back to work and lend your services because it's definitely needed. And the research is showing that these mothers can be so beneficial to the government agency as well. We'd like to thank you for listening to us as we talk about dealing with family life education, research-based intervention, access to early childhood. Now, let me go back to early childhood. There is a number of programs that are in the hospital for mothers, and they can access these programs prior to leaving the hospital. They can, if they're newborn and they want to breastfeed and they are having a complicated time, they can enroll in classes right there in the hospital to learn about breastfeeding and successfully breastfeeding. Now, if your child is of special needs and a low birth rate, you can talk to your pediatrician as well as the nurse about you getting into some classes to help you better understand how to work with those infants. Now, I want you to also know that there is a ton of research on the benefits of breastfeeding, and for those mothers who have low birth rate children, that would definitely be something that your doctor possibly will recommend. The breastfed milk and the colostrum in your milk has additional additives to strengthen that child and to help him thrive and to develop better. So 9 times out of 10, you might get a recommendation to breastfeed, and if so, you might also want to attend a class so you can better acquaint yourself with breastfeeding. And there are mothers now that are actually donating their milk to help other children who are in third world countries benefit from the colostrum in their milk, their breast milk, natural breast milk, not milk you buy out of the store. So that research is going on. And you have to understand that there's research for all kinds of disabilities now, and mothers, you want to get involved with your local school district so that you can get connected to newsletters to find out about all the research that they're discovering with children who basically have had, I'm trying to think, Down syndrome. They're finding out a lot of discoveries about Down syndrome, and if you are a member of an organization for special ed, you ought to be connected to the research department so you can find out the updated information about children with disabilities. Now, let me go on, ladies and gentlemen, and I want you to understand that our research is going to be limited because I'm not out there in the forefront, but once you do a Google and you start doing research online, you will find that there's tons of organizations, just about one in every 50 state, called the Family Life Center. The Family Life Center now has a Family Life Resource Center. Now, there is one that is governing the whole state, where they work with the whole state and make recommendations about services for families with disabilities. Then there is one that specifically works with selective groups, such as Hispanic groups, Asian groups, African-American groups. And those Family Life Centers are all throughout the 50 states. And parents, you can access these services because they are created for families with special needs children. They have a research department there. You can tap into that, and you can get more information about the daily research that is being looked at on a daily basis. And mothers, you ought to research your child's disability so you'll know more about it and have up-to-date information on it, because things are changing every day in the medical field, and they're finding newfound discoveries and cures for various different disorders. So you ought to definitely get involved in that. I'd like to thank you so very much for taking the time to be a part of the Family Life educational segment of the show, and I hope you've gained something from these topics that we're bringing you, and I hope you'll join us again. Now, we're going to go right into our ROA sisters, and my co-host, she won't be sharing the phone with me today because she is not in and cannot make it. But we're going to go right into Always Sisters, Always Friends. But bear with us as we go right down to Miss Seeley and see what Miss Seeley has to tell us about. Sisters, remember your name. Sisters, remember your name. Sister, have I got news for you? I say, sister, I sure ain't got a whole lot of time. Here we go. Along with her other counterparts as we work with this program throughout the month. And I'd like to also tell you that I was out today working with a group of our new counterparts that are going to be coming on the show with me so they can relieve on me of some of these segments. And Wednesday we should start the new segment where we're going to be bringing some of our other sisters on who are going to be heading up some of the discussion groups. So I can free myself from some of this work. As you know, I'm wearing all kinds of hats around here. By the time I get done, I'll be able to do this in my sleep. But nevertheless, ladies and gentlemen, let's go to station identification before we get started. And I want to thank you so much for joining me this evening and spending your 4th of July evening with me. And I know that the rocks are going to roar out there, and I'm going to be standing outside my doorstep looking at the fireworks from afar. I was at the fairground but came home because I had my show to do, but I still plan on enjoying my 4th of July. I am a creature of habit. I do enjoy celebration and much sabbatical, as you know. Those of you who know me know that I believe in sabbatical and taking free time. I didn't always believe this, ladies and gentlemen. I had to learn this idiosyncrasy. I was just on the phone talking to a male friend of mine, trying to teach him how to incorporate sabbatical in his life and to tell him how beneficial it is. The richer a man is, the more sabbatical he or she has in their life. But you become poor to some degree when you don't stop to acknowledge the art of recreation, of relaxation. It is very hard to learn to relax, and I know that this is an art and skill that I had to learn. And after I left my job from teaching and retired, I had to learn how to change gears and relax and go on sabbatical. And that's why Omi has planned a sabbatical coming up in the future, a four-day sabbatical. And I'm happy to be able to take these little relief gestures so that when I come back, I'm fresh for you. I'm able to give you all I got, giving you the best that I got. Like Anita Baker said, I'm giving you the best that I got. I'm going to place it all on my ready wing. No, I'm not going to do all that. The ready wing's gone, so there's no need of doing that. But I will tell you this much. Sabbatical is very important, ladies and gentlemen. Don't you forget it. And don't let anyone tell you that you must work from sun up to sundown. Put a limit on it. Finish your work and start again the next day. Find a reason to rejoice for the season. You'll be a better person. You'll be easier to get along with. And you won't be stagnant. And you won't be like leftover coffee, dragging yourself around in a cup. Come on, ladies and gentlemen, we want to do everything we can to stay young and beautiful. People are living to be 80 and 90 years old. As coming up on 60, I want to be the most beautiful woman you've ever seen at 60. And I want you to be able to say, how did you do it, Omi? And I want to be able to say, it was with sabbatical. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen. Let us get us some sabbatical as we go out here and get ready to dance up the Dirty Dozen. Are you ready, men? Get on the floor. It's a 4th of July celebration. Come on, men. I'm going to shake my shimmy while you shake yours. Let's get down on the
Yeah.
back, family. I hope you took advantage of that little stress reliever so we could get ready for sabbatical. I know I did. I'm going to slide out there on the floor before we leave here, too. Welcome back. And for you men who shake your shimmy like I shake mine, get ready. We're going to shake it up again. We just got you started. All right, back on the home front. We're talking about what's best for babies. Now, there was a study done that was done in Arizona, and I like to read to you a little bit about what it says, and this is best for babies. Okay, it was Ypsilanti County, Arizona, and I like to read to you what it says. It says children ages 3 and younger represent approximately 23% of the Arizona's child population, but they account for 39% of the substantiated reports of child abuse and neglect. This special vulnerability and support for best for babies, and that's the B4B, like the other order, the model described in the brief, and the people who brought the B4B to life knew one another and had worked together in the past. Now, this was a group of people who worked together in the past, and they created this B4B, which is what's best for babies. Now, let me go back to talking about school days and what's best for babies. We know that there are 10 hierarchies that a baby must have, and out of that hierarchy is a need to have substance, as we know, and a need to be needed and emotionally needed. Babies have emotional attachment. That's why you see them always wanting to sit close to you and your bosom. They have these emotional attachments that we must satisfy. Before just giving substance, you must give the emotional satisfaction of calming the child down, then giving them substance. We know that children have to have clothes, children have to have a place to stay, they must have a clean environment. All these things are required of a mother. And if a mother's not doing these things for themselves, then they can't very well raise a child appropriately because the needs analysis have not been met. So the hierarchy needs of the Maslow hierarchy needs, we know it's very important that you have some foundations of child development. We are mammals, ladies and gentlemen, meaning that as a mammal, we grow attached to each other. And believe it or not, that man out there you say you got passion for, and he gets on your nerve, but yet you are attached to him because you are a mammal, and mammals have attachment. Children and infants have attachment. So mothers who are mammals, what's different from animals than us, some animals do not stay attached to their children throughout their life. When you find a parent that is constantly saying, the child is grown, we don't need him anymore, he doesn't need us anymore, he has lost his attachment to being a mammal. Check that person. Explain to them, as long as that we fit in the mammal category, we're going to be attached to flesh and blood, our offspring, and we must stay connected to them even though they're in college, ladies and gentlemen, because that's where they get in trouble when we start telling them they're grown and they're not attached. Now, attachment is very, very natural for an infant. He needs attachment for stroking. He needs reassurance that you're going to be there. He needs to see you in the room, or you might need to tie him around your waist and just walk around the room with him so he knows you're there. Why do they need so much attachment? They're insecure. They're not sure if dinner's going to be there in the next half an hour. They're not sure if you're going to leave the room and won't come back with their milk or their something to eat. Now, babies are very, very smart, and they can read you. And while the babies are in the womb, they can perceptibly pick up vibrations. And history has shown us, and bear me out on this, that the vibrations have been so powerful that even the drumming of racism has been beat out in a form of a pattern to affect the unborn fetus in the womb. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it is now discovered under statistical research that they've discovered that children can detect when you're uneasy, unsettled, frustrated, and you have gone through a series of racial abuse, and it affects the child in the womb. So we're talking about abuse that can exist even in the fetal position outside of life. We're talking about when the child is conceived in the womb, he can detect the racial impartiality and insensitivity. Now, we're going to have to do something about that. Now, in our effort to help babies from the bench, we are going to be working with groups of people that will focus in on those babies and monitoring how many of them come here at full term. We've prayed a prayer. We've already sent out the clarion call. Now, our behavior modification, which is a prayer, that's all prayer is, can be done the same way through meditating. Meditation is a behavior modification, too. We must turn to the left and send our hand to the left as we send the word to heal those infants in those neonatal, in those incubators. We turn our hand to heal them that they will develop to full term. We turn our hand to the right, to the south, to the east, to the north, and the west, and we decree that those babies' vital signs will line up with what the Word of God said that they are at full term. And we do this because we are trying to create a nation, ladies and gentlemen, not one that is fragmented or defibbed by the breathing apparatus from the breathing respirators. These children have to live on oxygen that's not their own. I know this because in my career, I had to set these machines up. These machines were breathing for these babies. Then you have to wing them off so that they can learn how to naturally thrive on their own. So there are all sorts of things happening with their breathing, with their respiration, with their bloodline that has to be accommodated when they're born at low birth rate because they're not fully baked yet and they have to stay in the incubator. Ladies and gentlemen, we ought to be irate about these new findings. We really ought to be irate about it because the best thing for a child is to give them plenty of love. And to know that they're needed, and to know that mother will always be there when they whimper. It's important for babies to satisfy their curiosity. But when you look at the ability to have emotional attachment, it says that that child is waiting for you to make implementation in their life to give them direction and the go-ahead to develop. So mothers, I know you want to get away from the attachment and want the child to become independent, but it's very important and vital that you allow that child to be attached to you while he's in the infancy stage so you can develop him into a stable human being. Now, we're talking about what is best for babies. Let me say this. Now, African Americans, you've heard over and over again, well, a real nuclear family is a mother and a father in the home. Yes, but you must remember, darling, please, you must remember when my dear, Big Mama, and all the sisters was in the house, there weren't any men around. Those men had gotten sent off to do work for master, and you still had a family, and you still got up with Joe whenever you could. And the babies knew who their fathers were, and they weren't whimpering about, there's no man in this house. I don't think I can become a man. They went on and became a man. I want you women to understand that the family consists of that mother keeping structures together and tradition together. She, and by and by, will find her husband. But the real situation is the nuclear family are the children and the mother. Don't you forget that. And don't be appalled at the fact that you're raising your children alone, mother, because it's been this way since slavery. And don't let anyone tell you any different. Oh, you're a lower socioeconomic person. You're a minority. And you're not a minority. You are the majority. You can be found in every foreign country, everywhere you look. African Americans have appeared there. So don't let anyone give you the falsehood or don't give you the hype that you're a minority. So you got to get this right. families, you ought to understand that you can thrive and you can excel. In the event that you don't have a man in your house, go on and raise those children anyway, mother. You can do it. I know you can. And statistics won't say you can, but I'm behind you. Tell them that Omi told you that you can do it. And I'm behind you in all that you do, because families are important. It's great to have a man around, but if you can't, continue to do what you have to do. Ladies and gentlemen, and I want you to know that you're winners. No matter what happened in this situation, you are winners. You must believe that you can thrive before you will thrive. And if you don't believe that, you won't thrive. And we've already been a success. We've already been a success. And in the end, it says that we win. And you got to know that. We're winners. Come on now. Stand up.
Y'all ready?
Y'all ready? ladies and gentlemen, we are moving on up here in the Care to Read room. We certainly are, because we're focusing in on health awareness. And you know that's been a concern of mine for a long time. We always keep mind, body, soul, and spirit connected to our itinerary. So during this segment, we're talking about health awareness, mental health, and services for children and parents, ladies and gentlemen. And this whole topic has been focusing in on the mother and the child, healing the youngest child. And as we talk about that, I'd like to read you a quote from the Mental Health Services for Children and Parents in this great book that they've done research in. The practice tips that they offer us: develop the community's capacity to offer mental health and intervention to parents and young children together. That's why they're offering that together. And I quote, it says, babies who are harmed in their relationships with their parents and caregivers sometimes can be healed, and they believe that with appropriate practices that they can be mentally healed through interventions. Now, let me interweave something here in the quote. I believe that no amount of stress put on an individual or an infant cannot be healed by God. That's because Oromola was at the right hand of God, who knows all the inception of man, and he has all of the history of man. He knows our beginning from our end. He also knows the inception of diseases and how all diseases are cured. So he has all healing in his hand. I really believe that the mental illness perception that is prevailing throughout the community for the child and the mother has been a farce, and African Americans must step forward and talk about their African heritage, because we have never been an organization or society that took our mental health to any institution to heal us. We've always believed in spiritual healing, and we've always taken it upon ourselves as a unit group to heal our own kin and our own infants of any mental distress and ourselves as well. We've got to take those apparatuses and tools back, and we've got to reach back into our treasure chest. And here during this segment under health is where I'm going to introduce you to some health aspects that also come from the naturopathic learning and also from the priesthood. As a priestess, we've been instructed to learn as much as we can about natural healing and naturopathic medicine. And one of those naturopathic tools in working with women with mental disorders or working with women with drug disorders, all of it goes together. But we as a spiritual people naturally know how to take up arms and address and bear arms against these diseases, because it's in our tradition of herbology, in our tradition of spiritual work. We have tools in our treasure chest that we don't even care to mention to anyone. We keep a secret. Now, for those of you who are priestesses, I know we belong to a secret society, but we must put it out there. Oracles must be consulted. You must do readings in certain situations to get direction for the type of illness you're dealing with. Mental health first starts out as being a mental thought, and then it brings about the physical disorder. Most illness are in the emotional stage first and then manifests itself into a natural physical. So if there is a mental disorder, 9 times out of 10, the hypnosis believe that what is out of order can be placed back in order. Now, I'm not a hypnotist, and I'm not telling you that's where you are to go, but I'm telling you, in dealing with spiritualists, they are going to look at all apparatuses of your lifestyle, the quality of life, and also the quantity of rest, the quality of food. All of those things are going to be assessed to determine your illness and to help you put a lid on what to address. And it's very important, African Americans, we don't run to the psychiatric ward and let someone put a primary diagnosis on us called bipolar disorder or seasonal depression or schizophrenia. You have to be very, very careful, and you have to know all of these traits and what the diagnosis is. And one of the things that our African-Americans have not done is research mental health and mental illness. I have seen tons of men take the diagnosis of schizophrenia and wear it like a glove, like it fits them. I want to tell you that you ought to do more research, and this is only talking to you and giving you my recommendation, and you can take it or leave it. But you can also research it and find out that history will back me up on it. There have been many diseases and mental health illnesses that doctors who were mostly male were in position to write prescriptions and create diseases as well. Schizophrenia was a well-known condition that most doctors decided to create for their fidgety Caucasian wives who needed to be stabilized when they came home from work. Now, in giving them this disease or giving them this diagnosis, they also created an antidote of some sort of medicine to take for it. But it was a disease that was created and made up for Caucasian women. It was not a real condition. Now, the statistics show that more men that are African-American are being diagnosed with this condition. What's up with that family? How can an African-American man be diagnosed for this disease that never existed in the first place? That's why I say take heart to this mental health thing and go into the spirit and ask Oromola to reveal to you what source and manner of man where this mental illness comes from. Because some of the medicines, they're contraindicative, where they can cause more harm than good. And in a situation like that, you ought to give it a second thought before you quick to take on these psychotropic drugs, because they will cause suicidal behavior. And some parents have experienced more problem when their children were on these diseases than not. And they can become a problem. And the cure may seem so far away when taking these drugs because of the side effect. Now, we have been one as a black people to go into ourselves to find ourselves and to go to our spiritual director to guide us. Keep doing that, I say. In these sessions and group where they want you to open up and experience your inner childhood, talk about your family life. And if you know that you are dysfunctional families, what is there to talk about other than the fact that you've been brought up this way all your life, but this problem, you must solve it on your own. And you can start that through going through meditation and doing the Tree of Life meditation to look and get a glimpse of heaven and look into your own life and to see it through meditation. Now, I'm not a doctor, so I can't diagnose or can I make any recommendation, but I will say, African-American, you definitely have to get off this train that's headed to a collision with all of this meds that you're taking under psychotropic. Now they're giving it to four-year-olds who are taking medicine for hyperactivity. Hyperactivity with, attention deficit with hyperactivity and without it. And these children are on heavy, heavy meds. They are so drugged up that they are out of their mind. Now, you got mothers that want to retain these children so that they don't run the risk of getting kicked out of preschool and kindergarten. So they put them on these drugs not knowing the side effect. I say research the side effect and see if the side effects outweighs the benefit of the drug. Now, mothers, you may even say, well, I was a learning disabled, so I am on some type of psychotropic drug, so my whole family is. So now that everybody's on this psychotropic drug and nobody's going anywhere and they all are functioning abnormally, it's time for you to take another look at other options. Now, is it hereditary? Don't let anybody tell you that once somebody has a neurological disorder or minimal brain disorder function and the neurosynapse is not passing over information and now you have a collapsing of the medulla oblongata and you are not functioning with the minimal brain disorder, then you have to then come to grips with what is normal for you and what can you function with without all of the excessive drug treatments. So, mothers, I say, when looking at mental health, you must look at this wisely. You must also have a priest do the oracles to tell you where this condition was derived from. Where did it start from? Could it be from a divorce? Could it be from a death in your family? All of these things can play a part on your illness. Illness just doesn't happen overnight. Usually there's a pre-onset condition that brings about illness. And with the priestess, they could guide you and give you direction for your spiritual life to help you get back on a spiritual path. I say take the spiritual path, take that route, and rule out everything you can before you take all of these super-duper caustic psychedelic medicine. And that's what it is, because it takes people on a psychedelic trip. And you want to be mindful of the fact you're not trying to induce this condition. You're trying to relieve yourself of it. And it's very important that you understand, seek out a priest. Priests are always willing to sit down and talk with you. And pay the priest, of course. Make sure you ask them to do an oracle reading and give you a direction for your life, a destiny reading, and also do an overall health reading for you. Look at your astrological chart and map that out. Ask the priest to get involved and to help guide you spiritually. But once he puts you on a path, you must stay on a path so you don't fall off again. And take that note from Omi. And once again, I say thank you. Have a great day, ladies and gentlemen. And it's been great being here with you. And I want to say that we are going to win this thing. No matter what happens, we're going to win. And we are going to be about the business of trying to get you ready so that you can be with us as we get ready to stand up with the coalition for the court team working against the maltreatment of infants and toddlers and trying to assist the courts and helping them to find solutions to help our babies. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, I want you to have a fantastic holiday. And because we have gone off the air, but not out off the air completely, I want to give you some safety rules. Stay true to having fun. Kick it up, have a good time. But remember to remain safe. And also do things that are reasonable of a prudent human being. And don't start running out there doing things that you have no business doing. Make sure that you are a rational person and doing things that are great for you and your family. I want to thank you for going all the way with Omi today on this segment. You've been really great to work with, and I want to admonish you, and I thank you for staying the whole course. So stay with me, and we'll be back again tomorrow on Tuesday, same time, same place. And enjoy your evening, and have a great time on this 4th of July. And remember that this is the day that there was shooting and sparks in the air, and it brought us to another dispensation of our Emancipation Proclamation. And as we look at the Star Spangled Banner, we have to think about how blessed we are, how blessed we are. And I want you to remember that there was great things happening during that time. In New York City, there stands a lady, proud and tall above the rest, and all who sees her know just what she stands for. She stands for liberty for you and me. And I am proud to be called an American, to be named by the home and the free. I will honor my flag, but I'm gonna trust in God as my statue of liberty. As my statue of liberty. Have a great holiday, ladies and gentlemen, and I look forward to seeing you tomorrow. Oh, double and baba booey to you, y'all. See you tomorrow at 6 o'clock. Notice that our time has changed. 6 o'clock until 8:15. We'll see you there. Have a great holiday and a safe one. Oh, double.